Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, the weekly show that's all about girl power and food. My name is Carrie Diamond, and I'm the co-founder and editorial director of Cherry Bomb magazine. I'm excited to be hosting today's show because our guest is someone I've worked with and admired for a few years now. Jamie Schmones Erickson, did I get that right?
Yep.
Is the owner of Poppy's Catering and Events. You might think catering is unglamorous, but Jamie works with the likes of Stella McCartney, J. Crew, Madewell, and Vogue, providing beautiful seasonal food and drink for their parties. Here are just a few of the hors d'oeuvres you might get served at one of her events. I grabbed this off your website.
Okay.
A beet and goat cheese risotto ball with fried sage and parmesan, a vegetable samosa with cilantro, mint, and cashew chutney, grilled cheese with a kale and walnut pesto, fried halloumi bites drizzled with honey and nigella seeds and served on black ash matzah, which we have to talk about later, and beaten apple tartare with hazelnuts, lemon zest, labneh, did I say that right? Labneh, never know how to say that word, and crushed rose petals. Her company also does catering for weddings, and Jamie has earned a reputation for not being a typical wedding caterer. She's here today to talk about building her company from scratch, lessons learned, wedding trends, and some other insights. Jamie, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having me.
And we have some special guests with us today. My partner in crime, Claudia Wu, the creative director of Cherry Bomb. Hey, Claudia.
Hey.
And we have Gilly Houston. Oh, Gilly, you don't have a mic. We have Gilly Houston, a pal of ours, good friend of Cherry Bomb, too. And Gilly is currently doing social media for Yahoo Food. So welcome, Gilly.
Hi.
It's Gilly's first visit to Roberta's, and it's Jamie's very first radio show. So
woo-hoo.
Jamie is a radio virgin, and we are going to go easy on her today. But I was just going to say something terrible.
Sure.
But not a virgin for reasons we'll discuss later.
Okay, thank you.
Get rated G.
So anyway, before you launched Poppy in 2012, you were working at City Bakery in Manhattan as the catering and events manager. And City Bakery, for those of you listening, if you haven't visited, has maybe one of the best chocolate chip cookies in the world. But at what point, Jamie, did you say, I want my own company?
I think I've always wanted my own company. I've always chosen to take on jobs and work at places where a job description wasn't completely handed to me. Mm-hmm. And all I've ever wanted to do was dig my, you know, fingernails in and learn as much as I can and help small businesses grow. So I always wanted it. I just had no idea how.
So that's the next question.
Yeah.
How did you make it happen? Did you write a business plan? Did you raise money? Put your own money in there?
It was very circumstantial. I think I literally up to the day that I quit wouldn't have known I could do it. Mostly because I think money held me back. If you work in food, you often know that you're working pretty paycheck to paycheck. So savings wasn't huge. And I literally used to look at different people opening up restaurants or little shops. And Carrie and I both live in Carroll Garden, so in our neighborhood. And just was jealous and was like, how did they do it? Where is their money from? How do I do this for myself? So I was very fortunate that I kept in touch with one of my former bosses from an initial restaurant that was truly inspiring to me in joining the food movement. And he's a very successful entrepreneur himself and mentored me through the years. And he was always pushing me to start my own thing. And finally, one day he said, I'm so sick of listening to you talk about these small companies. I'll give you whatever you need.
Wow. That never happens.
No. And honestly, I mean, so not only was it that financial push, but knowing somebody who was so successful at this kind of stuff, believing in me, gave me the kind of go ahead. He kind of gave me an ultimatum, though. He said, I'm going to give you whatever you need, but you have to quit on Monday. It was a Saturday. Wow. And you know what hit that weekend? Sandy. And all of a sudden, the city shut down for a week. And it was this crazy, weird, circumstantial moment where I sat at home and I wrote the business plan and I crunched the numbers. And I mean, I'd been talking through different businesses over the years with him, and he would kind of like knock them out one after the other. So,
how did you figure out the ownership structure of that?
I'm 100% the owner.
Wow.
I honestly was given...
Saying, wow. I'm just so amazed. I mean, so many people want to open their own business and to have someone like that in your life.
I mean, it's the true meaning of angel investor. He basically said, I don't want to own any of your business. I want you to do this 100% on your own. We'll set up a loan structure. I paid him back within the year.
So before everybody thinks Jamie gets things handed to her, the woman does work like a dog. We've absolutely seen that.
So I worked like a dog for this guy. So I think it's also somebody who knew I would put everything I had into it. And
did you have a timetable in which you had to pay him back?
It was like a 4-year, 5-year loan. Okay. It wasn't really that much money in the grand scheme of things. Catering, unlike restaurants, in terms of the food business, and I didn't want to take that much. I also happened to have just gotten married, and it was the first time I had like a little bit of savings in my husband and my account. So we definitely discussed it and took that chance together. But unlike a restaurant where you really need so much money up front to make something that's so pleasing and welcoming to somebody walking in, here it was basically like, if I got a job, you know, as you booked something, you spent money. And the biggest thing for me was looking for a kitchen, having the money to put down for you know, the initial deposits and stuff like that. And
so when were you successful enough to have a space, to have your first employee, all those things?
It all kind of happened at the same exact time.
How did you find jobs? I think that's like the number one thing that people kind of struggle with. Like, and you've had so many great clients. Like, what did you do to market yourself?
There's a lot of unique there's a lot of things that I think are unique to my situation. The number one thing being that I'm not the chef of my own company. So from day one, I knew I was building a company where I would automatically need an employee. I had high expectations for what I wanted to do and who I wanted to work with and the kinds of clients I already had built and established relationships with. So in order to keep up with them, I obviously needed somebody who was way more professional in the kitchen than myself and could handle the capacity of what I wanted to be doing.
So explain your role. So you don't cook ever?
I don't. I mean, I cook in my house. I do not cook for Poppies. I'm 100% the business owner. I run the business. I handle all of the bookkeeping, all of the sales, all of the management. I mean, we've grown from a 3-person company to there's about 76 employees on payroll, 20 or so who are rotating through full-time positions. So, and that's within 2.5 years. So a lot of it is just managing managers. We're going to talk, I think, you know, about, you know, other elements. I run the business, which there's a lot to do.
So what were the early days like of Poppies?
So the other circumstance was that I knew the space that I wanted really early on, this kitchen space. And so there were a few months where it was negotiations and I had to submit business plans and proposals to them so that I could get approved for it, given that I had no business credit to my name or anything like that. So there was definitely a lot of pushing on that end. So there was a few months where we were cooking out of my apartment. which, I mean, we laugh about it. I look at my executive chef now and I say, thank you for believing in me. Thank you for believing in this company that you were coming over to my apartment. My dad, I'm from New York City, so I also have my family all here. My dad's like setting up our printer and the network. And I mean,
it takes a village.
Yeah, it was definitely not my ideal situation.
What would you have done differently looking back?
Nothing.
Because you're happy with where things are today.
Yeah, I think it was just a matter of waiting out that initial period of getting into the kitchen, which is one of the spaces that we have right now. But it just grew really organically, and I feel very fortunate that nothing was pushed and everything kind of happened for a reason. So
back to Claudia's question, how do you find new business? It's tough going out there and soliciting clients, convincing people to use you and not another caterer.
I don't want to sound really obnoxious, but they kind of come to us. And that's been amazing. I mean, definitely in the very beginning, I had to reach out to people I knew and clients that I have worked with in the past and was waiting until I felt 100% ready to put ourselves out there. But, I mean, I had clients who wanted to work with me, and that's what also gave me a really motivating push to know that it's not just about great food in this industry. It's about your relationships, and it's about cultivating new relationships, and it's about holding on to them. And that all takes a lot of work on our side, and a lot of people in our industry who start a company as the chef, but also are running the business side. I mean, I look at them and just wonder how they handle it.
Crazy, I think.
Yeah, you're running back and you're doing your emailing and you're doing all the proposals, and there's just so much hand holding with catering.
Which brings me to my next question.
Yeah.
So you work with two very fickle audiences, the fashion industry and brides. How do you handle the customer relations side of things?
That's something that we take extremely seriously, and that's something that customer relations is something that I believe in wholeheartedly. I mean, I got started in restaurants as a hostess and never left that position. I think I've always been very much at the forefront of your relationship with people and knowing how important that is. So fashion industry, I would say, is 75% of what we do. The weddings and the brides are just a small portion. But even within the fashion industry, there's so many different facets of who hires us, from photo shoots and dealing with production staff and production teams in this kind of all back of house type environment, to the press previews, to, I mean.
Yeah, walk us through one of your recent gigs.
I mean, press previews are a really big thing right now.
What does that mean exactly? I know what you mean. Tell the audience what that
means. Well, I was going to actually use this as an example because I think it's really interesting where Carrie and I go back, where one of the first jobs we actually did, I'm trying to think if we were even in our kitchen. It might have been out of my apartment when we first did the first coach.
The coach job? That's funny.
I didn't know that.
You had just started your business.
We literally had just started our business. And I mean, the question that comes to us or the comments are, you know, oh, we're looking to do a press preview. Can we have a proposal? This is what we've typically done in the past. They've sent me menus and estimates. And the biggest thing when I started the company was, why do you want to do exactly what you've done in the past?
Oh, so you must have loved me, because I was like, we want to do everything different
from
what we did in the
past.
You
are the dream client for me. Female-owned farm-to-table catering company. I was like, okay.
Just to give people some background, I was working at Coach, and we were working with some great caterers, but kind of old school for New York, and I just didn't feel like the food was representative of what the brand stands for. And I said, there's got to be some like awesome woman out there who's doing a really cool catering thing and doing farm to table and more seasonal food, and can we find her? And who was it, Jordana?
Mm-hmm.
Was like, I know the perfect person. And you walked in And you were the perfect person. I mean, we've worked with you season after season.
And I mean, the biggest thing for me is knowing there, I have so much respect for these other catering companies out there. In New York City, there's so much business to go around that what I've really taught all of us to do within the company is to know what we do well, believe in it, and then sell it that way. And so in the initial conversations with anybody from brides to any fashion client, be it a drop-off gig or a full-service catering event, we try to get a better understanding of who's eating our food, what's the budget, what's the whole vibe, and then kind of tell them exactly who we are. And then if it matches, great. And if it doesn't, and they start to name something that doesn't match what we do, we say we're probably not the right fit and we decline the job. So it's a very different structure than a lot of, I was told when I first started the company, never say no. And I didn't take that advice. And I stand by my choice to not take that advice because I don't want to change what I was trying to do with something new.
And so know when to walk away.
Yeah, I definitely know when to walk away.
So speaking of weddings, how expensive is it to get married in New York City these days? I was curious what the average price of the wedding is that you work on.
I am not going to say I'm a wedding expert. At all. I think that we get a very different clientele as a bride than we do from our corporate type of clientele who tend to spend a lot more money because it's not their own. The ironic part is a lot of our brides do come from having our food through something we've catered from a fashion industry event, and then they love what we do. They come to us as a bride. And, you know, I don't want to, like, say cliche, it's a Brooklyn bride or somebody a little bit more low-key, but I'm not dealing with the biggest budgets out there. So I would say New York's weddings can range completely $50,000 up. I'm sure you can do it for less, but it starts to get really difficult.
Wow. So any trends you're noticing in the wedding world among the Brooklyn brides?
Again, like... The brides are not, you know, are not our, the kind of brides that we deal with and the trends that I'm seeing the most of is looking for something that's not typical. And I guess that's where that quote came from, even in the article you guys wrote in Cherry Bomb, which is when I said, I'm not a wedding caterer. And they said, we're not looking for one. So we're often meeting up with people who want a more family style wedding meal instead of a three-course seated meal, who want more of past apps that are really heavy in a cocktail style wedding because they want to just have fun and be on the dance floor the whole time but still want great food. So just something a little bit moving away from the more traditional. But I can't say that is the average or the majority of New Yorkers. I mean, there's so much still that's so classical. And
have you catered a gay wedding yet?
We have. And we have another one coming up at the end of the summer at the New
awesome.
Museum. Yeah.
And, okay, so that black ash matzah. Tell us about that.
That was an experiment from a few of my chefs in the kitchen. When we moved into our new... This past winter, we took over a second catering kitchen that has pizza ovens. So finally, baking breads and doing things like that has become in full force.
Oh, your chefs
experiment
must love that.
Yeah. So that was definitely one of the experiments. I can't actually say that's on a sample menu. We definitely are still playing around with it. And it depends on, honestly, how long it sits that we've mastered it to still stay really crunchy. But it's something that we're playing with, and black ash is something that we're using a lot of now.
Cool. So what does that even mean?
Well, they've been taking vegetables and charring it, and then you take that and you dehydrate it, and you grind it down to almost a powder. It's got a great look. It's got a great taste to it that's really subtle. We've been doing it with lemon a lot so that it has like a kind of smoky lemon flavor to it.
Gilly, you've got your fingers on the pulse. Have you heard, do you know about this Ash thing?
I have not heard of this Ash thing, but I'm intrigued. Okay.
Definitely seen it on more restaurant menus lately.
We need to pay attention. Is that something you try to, how do you keep on top of what is going on in the restaurant world? Because obviously that's where a lot of people are getting their ideas today about what's happening in food and drink and what they might want for an event or wedding or whatnot.
Honestly, I think that we have an extremely collaborative group of people, and I would give, I mean, the black ash all came from my kitchen. It didn't come from my, it wasn't my brainchild, so I will give them full credit for that. They're an extremely collaborative and experimental kitchen when they have the time to experiment. But I think less so about the finger on the pulse and seeing what other people are doing. And we happen to just keep trying out things. And then it's almost funny where you see it after you've done it. I mean, Bon Appetit magazine, we always say, is reading our minds. It's like we're one step in front of it. And then we look like we've ripped out all of the recipes from Bon Appetit and just cooked them all. But
so what advice do you have for anyone hiring a caterer? I know that's always, it's a big deal, because like you said, when you're doing it for work, you're spending someone else's money. When you're doing it for your wedding, that's high pressure.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between being somebody hiring a caterer for their company. I mean, I'm a very straight shooter. I don't beat around the bush. Budget's a huge part of it. Really understanding what you're looking for, having kind of a vision of what you want. And then in New York City, the cost of rentals and staffing is the biggest shock to most of my clientele. They say, no, but can you just tell me the cost of the food? And I'm like, it just goes so much farther beyond that, you know, by the time we deliver it and the rental trucks. And are you looking for lounge furniture? Or are you looking for just glassware? So the first thing we always tell people, if they're calling us as the preliminary phone call, is find a venue first. A lot of venues have exclusive caterers, too. Depending on the venue that you choose, it may or may not have a kitchen. What are we working with here? How do we move backwards into creating a menu based on the actual place that we're, you know, cooking out of and presenting the food to you?
So number one, know your budget. Number two, pick a venue. Number three, find your caterer.
Yeah. Okay. I would just say venue comes before caterer, typically, even though we get a lot of those very initial phone calls.
But budget is king.
Yeah. All right. It helps dictate, because we move backwards a lot and are very honest at saying, okay, I think that your budget can be best used in this way.
All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb on the Heritage Radio Network.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Jamie Shmonis Erickson of Poppy's Catering. When she was little and in school, people would call her Shmo, which is not a nickname that we still call her today. But back to your Shmo days. Let's talk about your childhood. I read that you grew up on the Lower East Side, and anyone who's visited there knows it's been a very colorful neighborhood throughout its entire history. So what was it like when you were a kid?
Well, I'm the fourth generation that lived on Grand Street. My mom grew up on Grand Street with her parents and her grandparents, who only spoke Yiddish. So I grew up
You're like Grand Street royalty.
Yeah, so I grew up on the FDR Drive wondering why I lived down there. There was no reason for anybody to come down to where I lived other than if you lived in those big co-op buildings, of which my entire family did. My grandparents were across the street. My great aunt was across the street. Aunt and uncle and cousins, you know, up by Clinton. So we were all in close proximity of each other. But
what was that like as a kid? I had no family around me. I can't imagine that.
I mean, people ask what it was like growing up in New York City, but I don't think you can answer any other way than that's your childhood. So that's what I knew. I went to school in the West Village in Chelsea because at the time growing up here, it was a little easier to get into districts outside of where you lived. So I definitely was all over the city and definitely got to experience getting out of the city too, and having summers outside the city. But
who cooked?
Both of my parents cooked. My mom more predominantly. She was a teacher my whole life, actually, on Grand Street too, where she went to school. I mean, school.
Do you still have family on the Lower East Side?
My aunt and uncle and cousins. I mean, all of us have grown up now, but yeah, my parents still live in the same apartment I grew up in, so we're still tied down there.
And were your grandparents cooking? Did you have a grandmother who cooked all the time and made traditional food?
So my grandparents were alive till I was 10, and they were a huge part of my early childhood. I didn't have babysitters. They just took care of us. And religion was not a big part for me of my childhood. However, the Friday night Shabbos dinner, I now realize that's what it was, but to me it was just our family getting together always at my grandparents' house. And my poppy, who I named my company after, was always whipping up something, both of my grandparents. But
so walk us through the dinner. What was served?
I mean, we had everything from spaghetti and meatballs to matzo ball soup and, you know, your very traditional Jewish heritage type food. I was a very picky eater, though, ironically. Didn't eat any. I mean, I was a pasta and butter type kid, so.
So, okay, let's go back to Poppy. So, obviously, your grandfather meant a lot to you because you named your company after him. So, tell us about him.
So, I don't think I really understood that much about his time at the B&H Dairy. So I'll go back. My grandfather worked at the B&H Dairy, which still exists on 2nd Avenue. And he worked there for about 40 years. But that was from 1940 till, I think, just under 40 years or so, till about, you know, 1980. So just before I was born. And a New Yorker article came out about him.
Wait, that article's about him?
Yeah,
oh,
the
that's
counter
so funny.
Man.
I was reading that last night.
Leo Ratnofsky, my grandfather. So
he was a legend.
He was a legend, and I didn't really understand it or really read it and interpret it until much later on. So to me, it was my grandparents were just two people across the street that took care of me. I didn't really understand much more than that. But the culture around food was absolutely ingrained in us and was passed down through my parents, and is probably the closest connection I have to the Lower East Side and just childhood.
So B&H, for those of you who don't know it, it's one of those classic Second Avenue spots where you could get an egg cream, pierogi, and, you know, cheese, potato, spinach, mushroom, sauerkraut flavor, challah French toast, kasha with mushroom gravy, bialy with cream cheese, like on and on. The sad thing is B&H was damaged in that gas explosion that happened back in March, and it's unclear if it's reopened. Do you know if it has?
You know, I donated money. I was following. They were sending email updates for a while, and we're still trying to collect even more money. I'm not quite sure of the status of it right
now.
I need to
walk past. But the sad, hopefully they'll reopen, because those Second Avenue delis are like endangered species.
Absolutely.
These days.
And I mean, it's ironic, like, that I read about all of this and his lifestyle there and working behind the counter as an adult, but we really didn't go there and experience it as a kid. I mean, I guess it was just because he was cooking for us at home all the time and taking care of us
Do you remember going there at all?
No, he was way gone, and I think a lot of it felt like it changed completely. The management and ownership and the type of people who were working there changed so much. So,
did he tell stories? Did you have a sense of how hard he had worked over the years?
Honestly, I was so young, I don't remember. There's so much I would ask and be curious about now, but I don't think I had those kinds of questions in my head as a little kid.
Because reading that story, I was like, how did this not scare her away from the food business?
Everything could have scared me away from the food business, but I guess I was determined.
So interestingly, you picked catering because catering has a reputation as being the least glamorous part of the food world. Why do you think it has that rep?
I think it's pretty clear that a lot of people have talked poorly about catering for so many years and for right reasons. It's not so glamorous seeing food being cooked for hundreds of people at a time. It's not so glamorous seeing food in hotel pans being shipped off on baker's racks and things like that. It's not nearly as glamorous as the restaurant world.
Because the restaurant world is so glamorous.
So glamorous. I mean, nobody's taking away the hard work from any of these industries. But there's definitely an example I talk about all the time, which is when we show up on events and we see food, you know, and I hire prep chefs, for instance, that just work particular events, but they haven't worked in our kitchen actually making the food. Because what happens in catering, for those of you who don't know, is often the food is cooked hours in advance in a different kitchen, and then it shows up at wherever you're having the event, and it's reheated or assembled and made into magical looking beautiful bites of food passed out on platters or, you know, plated up for your dinner. And I think what's so important is that there's this world of freelancers that show up on events and are just the ones kind of prepping and plating for you. And if they don't know the history of, you know, how you prepared the food earlier the day, you just don't have the same respect for it. And I completely understand that. I say that all the time when we look at a tin of pulled pork that just arrives and you're like, and you can almost say ew about it. But when you saw it first arrive as this beautiful heritage pork and you see the time and the love that goes into it hours earlier and the homemade sauce and the, you know, it's just a very different, less glamorous side of the food world.
Oh, no, go ahead. However.
No, I think I think what we are striving for in this new age catering world, and there's others out there trying to do what we're doing at Poppy's, is create food and menus that doesn't have to be completely reheated and would be great at room temperature and using the freshest ingredients and kind of teaching our clientele about a new approach to catering so that we don't have to have this rubbery chicken or boiled piece of meat that's been sitting in a proofing box for hours.
I think what's so nice about what you do is you just think it through the whole way. I mean, it's not just about the food. It's everything's beautifully bite-sized. Your presentation is beautiful. The people you hire to pass the hors d'oeuvres, I mean, what they wear and their attitude when they walk around, you really think it through from start to finish. And I'm guessing that's what brings your clients back to you. Yeah.
And hopefully passes our name around to other clients. Yeah, I think I kind of approached it the way restaurants in New York City, the whole Brooklyn food movement was really happening, and farm to table, such a cliche term at this point, but restaurants were so on top of it and catering companies were not. And it was this whole new vibe. I mean, we're sitting here at Roberta's as a perfect example of getting the top quality food with knowledgeable servers in an extremely more casual, approachable way. And that's what we were trying to bring to the catering side of things. Like, you can have such a great meal, it doesn't have to feel stuffy or stale or any of the things that, I mean, people joke about with catering and are pretty much true.
Did you read Chef Gabrielle Hamilton's memoir, Blood, Bones, and Bones? You did read it.
I sure did.
That must have been a tough read for you because the whole a big chunk of that book is about catering.
I read it early, you know, right when it first came out.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to know Gabrielle worked for 20 years in the catering business.
Yeah, I mean, but her experience in catering is what seems so typical in the old school catering world. I mean, I'm amazed that so many of these companies still get to exist doing that same style of food now. And it's what made me feel like there was a little bit of room for
a new fresh idea
to come in. Mm-hmm. So,
do you ever see the day when you might switch to a different part of the industry? I know you're not a chef the way Gabrielle is, but do you want to have a restaurant one day? Do you want to do a cookbook one day?
You never know. I think I couldn't have predicted any of the things that happened in the last 2.5 years, honestly. So we started doing a pop-up shop, which is the closest thing to kind of a brick-and-mortar store, whereas because we expanded, we had a bit more room at our original bakery, an original production kitchen, which has a very charming storefront feel to it. We started opening up. It's in Cobble Hill, Brooklyn.
So tell, what's the address again?
243 DeGraw Street.
And when's your next pop-up?
That's a great question. Follow us on Instagram at Poppy's Catering.
And Jamie happens to have a great Instagram account. So if you want to see what she's up to, what her dishes look like, you can check that out. So aside from the next pop-up, what is next for Poppy?
Well, I'm due with a baby in October, and so that's a pretty big deal for me right now. And honestly, when we moved into our second production kitchen this past winter, we have a lot of room and shoes to grow into there. So with a baby on the way and plenty of room to grow, I think we're just kind of seeing what the next, you know, what, how to get through the fall and see us through next year. So you never know. But I think we're just growing at a gradual pace, and it's really exciting. We're always hiring great new people who want to be a part of our team, and the pop-ups will definitely come back in the fall. They just kind of ended right now because for many of you who are New York City residents, you know that everybody flees on the weekends of the summer, and that's when we were opening up. So come fall, when everybody's back in the neighborhood and is looking for great things to do, we'll definitely be open because it's a great opportunity for us to meet people face to face and, get to meet new clients and show people that what we do, because so many people in the neighborhood especially walk by wondering what the heck is going on in there.
You do have the cutest storefront.
Thank you.
In the neighborhood. It's adorable. Well, we'll have to have you back because, as you know, the whole having a baby, having a family, finding balance, that's a huge thing for us. We could probably dedicate several shows to that.
Yeah, so. My husband's a part of the business, too. So it's definitely a family business. I definitely have one of the most amazing teams I've ever seen, been with, worked with, and without them, I would be a lot more nervous right now.
Yeah, you seem very calm.
Yeah, I am pretty calm about the whole thing. I'm very excited, but honestly, I have a phenomenal group of chefs and a phenomenal support on the office side doing everything alongside me. So I'm excited to keep growing with them.
Great. Well, we can't wait to meet the little one. And it was good seeing you. We haven't
you
seen
well.
You since Jubilee. Jamie did the and Poppy did the breakfast for our Jubilee conference back
fun.
In March.
We met a lot of great women that day.
We were thrilled to have you. We did want you to do the breakfast the year before, but I think the business was still so new. I think you were kind of in a state of shock maybe when we met to talk about that.
I think so too. I remember that. I was like, I can't handle anymore. I mean, that was part of the saying no that's so hard. I remember being like, what did I just say no to? But usually I feel as though if it's not right and you can't do something at 100 or 110%, that, you know, the right moment will come back again, and hopefully it did last year. It was a great experience to be a part of it.
Oh, good. Well, it all worked out, and I have no doubt we will work together again.
Thank you.
Soon, probably. So, Jamie, thank you for coming on the show. Claudia, Gilly, good to see you both. And thank you to everyone out there for listening. Radio Cherry Bomb is a co-production of the Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. To learn more about our magazine or to subscribe, visit cherrybomb.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or Stitcher. As Julia Child said, a party without cake is just a meeting.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.